It's witchcraft.
Hey, it's 4:20 a.m. Hi, and welcome to episode 72 of the Stoned Witches Hour.
No shit, 72?
It really is 72, Shell. Can you believe that crap?
Oh my God. Okay, keep going.
Where was I? Oh, right. 72 of the Stoned Witches Hour. On this podcast, two best friends separated by way too many miles get together to smoke copious amounts of the best cannabis they can find while telling each other creepy true tales from across the US of A. And today, getting ready to interview a local paranormal group, I'm Layla.
And I'm Shell, and I miss you. We're doing this like every other week summer thing, and I miss you, and I miss everybody and our listeners, and I'm just glad to be back today.
Me too. It has been far too long. We apologize for the long gap, but you know, summer's here, and we've got festivals going on. We have our other podcast, Back on the Broomstick. We're doing workshops and classes and covens and coven interviews, and we're a little busy.
But we've also been talking to paranormal groups. So today we have guests.
Yay!
We're going to chat with a local paranormal group. But first, before we dive into that, what are you smoking, my friend? We haven't chatted weed in a couple of weeks.
You know, you could probably guess what I've got in my pipe today. I have a trio of
Jack
gelatos. Yep. Trio of gelatos. I am smoking powdered gelati, a gelato 41.
And what do you mean powdered?
Oh,
like
wow.
Keef?
Do you want to see what I mean by powdered? I'm sad that our listeners can't see this. But when I say powdered, it looks like it's covered in powdered sugar. It's literally white. I'm going to open this up and show you. Let's see if I can get a nug out here and you can see it.
Oh, wow. Okay, listeners. I am going to climb through my Zoom camera and lick this weed. This is fantabulous looking.
And you would be absolutely right and proper to do so because this weed is fantastic. It looks like sugar. It tastes like sugar. It smokes so sweetly. You know I love the gelatos because of that fantastic flavor.
It's sweet?
It's so sweet. The taste is like fruits and sugars and dessert. And not only does it give me fucking high, but it tastes fantastic. So I love me some gelatos.
And you're getting something off the food pyramid.
That's right.
How healthy.
Now, I like these three gelatos because they're at three different price points. And I would have to say they all three smoke about the same. So that's kind of funny.
Well, that's annoying then. Why is there three price points if it's the same shit? God bless America.
It is three different types of gelato. You know, three different cultivars that have been, you know, interbred with other things. I'm just looking up to see what this powdered gelati was because it was pretty expensive. So this is about a $350 ounce.
Holy crap. That's, wow, I've paid a lot for weed and that's more than wow.
Yeah, so that's about $12 a gram.
Are you getting what you pay for though?
Absolutely. The high is really, really good. The taste is fantastic. However, I'm also smoking this gelato 41. Now, the powdered gelati was $12 a gram.
Okay.
This gelato 41 was $5 a gram.
Okay. What's the difference?
Well, it's not as pretty. It doesn't look as pretty. It doesn't taste quite as good, but the high is about the same. Just about the same.
Well, and then what's with this $12 a gram shit?
It looks prettier. Maybe that's why. And the Jet Fuel gelati was about middle of the road. It was probably between those two. I would say it was like $8 or $9 a gram roughly. And that one also tastes really good. It has a little bit more of that gasoline taste to it, along with the sweetness. Maybe that's the Jet Fuel in it, but I didn't mind it. It almost gives it like a minty flavor along with
the
sweet.
I love my weed like I like my whiskey. Burning and gasoline tasting.
There you go. Then you'd like this one because it tastes like a dessert with whiskey. And it gets you really, really high. So three different price points, all very, very good. But, you know, you don't always get what you pay for. Sometimes it pays to get the slightly less expensive kind. But I'm loving all of them and I'm very, very high and very happy. So what are you puffing on over there, Shell?
Okay, I went back to something that I've smoked before because I have a tendency sometimes to like, I don't know, it's like you're the brains of the operation, but I'm like the weed connoisseur who wants to try something different every time.
Absolutely.
But I went back to something.
What you got?
Now, first of all, we've had this conversation before. This was cheaper because it's what's called mini buds.
Oh, you and I love the smalls or the mini buds. We like
Popcorn.
that deal. Popcorn.
Popcorn nuggets. So it was a little bit cheaper because it's mini buds to begin with, but this is banana pudding-tang. I just love the name.
Oh.
I just love the name. It doesn't taste like banana, nor does it taste like pudding, but I love it. But this shit is rocking at 34%.
That is some damn good THC right there.
It was still only, so what'd you say that powder came out to an ounce? What, 355?
350.
Okay. So I got an ounce of this. And I got it after tax for 188, and it's 34% THC. Love it. And I think it was cheaper, even though it's a high THC content, because of the whole mini buds thing. I don't give a shit if it's big, if it's small, if you ground it for me and already prepackaged it ground. I don't care. It smokes the damn same. I'm not into aesthetics. I'm into the smoke.
Yes, you have always been into that THC, that high, heavy hitting punch. Whereas I like to go for a good high, but I definitely like the flavor. I want the taste.
As you are aware, I'm getting ready to go on a camping trip.
Oh,
And so
yeah.
I got some stuff to do. I'm a little busy, got some packing, got some sorting. And this is definitely something you can smoke and get shit done. Like I've been getting shit done all day today, smoking off this stuff. And I'm still ready to go. So if you're looking for like that couch, pass out, melt into things, this is not it whatsoever.
You know, that's what I'm liking about these gelato crosses is that I have an excellent high going on. I've got a great body buzz, but I'm also very, very productive. I'm also packing to camp. I have 2 weeks of workshops coming up for pagan festivals over the rest of this month, and
So
we're
exciting. I
busy.
love summer.
Me too. It's a busy, busy time. So definitely having, you know, something that will help me with pain management and also help keep me focused while not having me couch locked is necessary this time of year.
And don't worry, folks. We'll still be here bi-weekly despite our vacations this summer. So stay tuned. One thing I got to ask you,
What's up?
this labeling thing. We've talked about the lack of consistency.
Oh, yes.
So if they're going to tell me everything under the damn sun, why can't the label say whether it's an indica or a sativa? If you're telling me everything else, why can't you just tell me that it's one line? There's extra empty space on the label. Why not?
Some do, some don't. Some places are starting to move away from that a little bit as we're finding scientifically that those labels of indica and sativa that we kind of slapped on these plants willy-nilly isn't really holding up once we look at them genetically. So things that we have historically said, this is all indica, we're finding that that's not necessarily true. I think some places might be kind of trying to get away from those designations, even though they're very familiar to people.
Man, this change in stuff is going so fast. People like me can't keep up. Like, I can't keep up.
I think you're keeping up just fine, Shell. Looks like you're getting some great weed at great prices all the time. So I don't know if you have much to worry about other than an abundance of good weed.
I don't know the science. I just want to smoke. Just give me something that I can get high with and smoke. I don't give a shit
Right?
about the science behind it.
Exactly. Now, actually, I'm going to use your little science comment as an abrupt segue into our main topic this evening. But we're going to be talking to some paranormal investigators who are using science to try and find ghosts and to quantify paranormal activity. We have the pleasure this evening of having Rob and Melissa come on from Monroe County Paranormal Investigative Group. And we are so excited to hear all about this group. Rob himself has been on over 500 investigations.
Holy mackerel.
Rochester, New York is surprisingly a hub of activity, and Rob even has a theory on why that is. But Rochester, New York is home to the Fox Sisters, who were basically patient zero for the spiritualist movement in the United States. And also, this area is home to a plethora of folk stories, such as the White Lady Ghost Story, which we debunked on a previous episode. And supposedly, it's also the burying place of a potential person who could have been Jack the Ripper.
Western New York is like, the place is just crawling. It's just crawling with the ghosties.
It is a surprising hotspot of paranormal activity. And again, we'll ask Rob why, because he does have a theory on what's going on here.
Because the other thing, Lilydale, the spiritual center, is also in Western New York. Western New York's great. I didn't realize some of the reasoning behind why Rochester itself could kind of be a hot spot. And I kind of got a little background knowledge of that before today's episode. You know, for living in upstate New York, I really didn't look into that and probably should have. But now I know, and I'm excited for these guys. I'm excited to hear about all their exploits. And, you know, like you said, Rob, over 500 investigations. What has this guy seen? I want to hear about it.
Exactly.
Like, I just want to know. Obviously, there's been times where it was probably totally debunked, and we totally understand that. But I want to hear about the times where the guy was ready to shit himself.
Me too. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about. I know you and I have done some very amateurish ghost hunts ourselves. Maybe we'll get to talk a little bit about some experiences you and I have had, and see how they compare.
And what he thinks about him.
Now, I do know, I'm just going to give you guys a little bit of a teaser. We're not going to talk about it this evening because Rob is a sensitive and I don't want to give away anything about my house, but he will be coming to investigate the house that I'm currently staying in later in August. And we'll be having that investigation for all of you as well after it happens. So we won't be talking about any of the strange experiences that we have had here because he doesn't want to have any of his information tainted. He prefers to go into investigations having zero knowledge of anything that has occurred there.
These are the kind of people that I prefer because, you know, dating back to the beginning of the spiritualist and psychic movements in America, there has been scammers. And I actually prefer the people who want to go in cold turkey, no knowledge, no conversation, because that just makes me kind of feel a little more confident. You know what I'm saying? Not that I doubt anybody and not that I'm trying to be rude or nothing, but the less
Sure.
you know, the more confident I am about your results.
That is one more clue if you're having someone do an investigation for you. If they're pumping you for every last detail, that could be a red flag. So having someone come in as a clean slate, that really helps to lend credence to any evidence that they do find.
And, you know, kind of an example of that real quick is when we did our amateur investigation of your father's house
The
and
very haunted house in Seneca Falls,
also,
yeah.
yeah, I was going to say also in upstate New York, you know, you had told us stories and we kind of, I don't want to say we kind of knew what we were getting into, but we kind of had some expectation. And I think that the adrenaline of those
Yes.
prior conversations may have fueled some of our experiences. So I love the blind eye approach to that they
Yes.
take.
I agree. I agree. And that way, again, you can trust it a little more. If they already know that there's the spirit of a little girl here and they come in and they're like, "I feel the presence of a young female child."
Yeah, but
That's
if I'm sitting there thinking that I'm having some chat with some, you know, hot and sexy succubus, and they come in and telling me I'm chatting with like some 90-year-old demon, you
You might
know?
just be in the bad room of the Stanley Hotel.
Right.
But yeah, it's good to go in as a blank slate, I think. So that's definitely one thing that they do that I really enjoy. But let's get into our interview with them and see how it goes. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, we have Monroe County Paranormal Investigative Group joining us today. We have Rob and Melissa. Please introduce yourselves.
Ladies first.
My name is Melissa. I've been in the group for about 5 years now, and I am a case manager with the group and kind of a PR, I would put it, kind of run all the tech stuff for Facebook,
Little bit of everything then.
Instagram.
Jill of all trades.
Yes.
I feel that vibe. I have the same tasks.
Yes. It comes with being the youngest person in the group, so.
Always got to rub it in, don't you?
Oh, wow, I can relate to that.
Always have to rub it in.
I know.
And my name is Rob. I am the founder, whatever else you want to put title after that, of MCPI. I founded the group in 2002. So I've been at this for 21 years with this group.
Now, Rob, when I was kind of getting some background information, I read on one of the websites that you've done over 500 investigations.
We are at 1,070.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I update that. Yeah.
That is a lot. The website we're talking about is monroeghosts.com.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, we have a lot of updating to do, but what it boils down to is just, it's just longevity in the field. You know, some cases are consults over the phone. Some cases are internet consults. Some cases are in-person investigations and things like that. So, but 1,070 cases.
Now, do most of the cases and most of the correspondences you get from folks, is that pretty much from either Monroe County, New York, or upstate New York in general? Or are you getting contacted from all walks of the world?
Melissa, where have we last few have been?
Kind of all over. We've had Florida. I feel like there was one in Missouri. There's a lot of Monroe counties in the United States.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think that's where some of the confusion comes in, but we'll try to connect them with
the correct
whoever's local to them.
So. Or try and help them if we can. Yeah. So far this year, I've done one from Australia, one from France, and two from England.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. Real quick. I know Layla has an agenda, but I'm always all scattered all over the place. How are you helping people outside of New York State? Are you doing investigations over Zoom? Are you just listening to their experiences? Like, I need to know this.
Okay, so we will gather as much information. We'll have them send photos, videos. We'll try to hook them up with people close to them. And if we cannot, then we will try and source solve over the internet. Like the cases that I had with France and the guy in France, apparently this is not a big thing over there. They don't really have paranormal investigation groups, and it's not something that you can just reach out and find. So it was a lot of back and forth with, okay, here's what I have going on. Okay, can you get me some pictures? Can you get me some video? And then it's kind of sitting here going through everything, trying to, is it really something that's going on? Is it just a natural occurrence? Is it something that, that we can handle via, Skype or Zoom or whatever, the case may be. Mm-hmm. We never want a client to investigate their own home. So we never try and do an investigation type thing over the internet. Investigating your own home is just a way to make things worse.
Yeah, I saw that warning on your website.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good advice, I think.
Yes.
Now, Melissa, can you tell me what a case manager is? What does it mean for you to be a case manager?
She babysits Rob.
Part of it's babysitting Rob. keeping him kind of in line. I kind of call myself the mom of the group sometimes.
It's like Michelle for me.
But usually someone will contact us either through the website, they'll call us. We get Facebook messages too. We get emails. And then they'll, say, hey, we got something going on. One of us, I'm one of three case managers, will set up a call, get some more information, do some preliminary research, have them send us whatever they've got. And then usually we'll do either walkthrough or we'll actually just go set up an investigation and we'll figure out a date and time that works for them.
So you kind of are the organizer of all of the details. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, what is the radius you guys will go? Are you only willing to go within Monroe County, New York, or will you go, what's your radius of physically going to investigate?
First one was an hour and a half away.
Yeah, I would say, if we can do it within 2 hours, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
If we can get there within 2 hours, we're good. And I would even say if it's someone that needs help outside of that 2 hour window, if we can plan it ahead of time enough, we could probably stretch it to three.
Okay. So people, if somebody needs help in the area, you will either be able to physically help them over, digital media somehow, or even find people in their area, another group who could help them. So you have a network of paranormal investigative groups.
It's not necessarily a network. There used to be, can I need to start at the beginning.
Go for it. Yes.
When I started investigating, there were 2,000 groups in the world. The world.
Wow. That's not a lot.
No.
I started investigating 5 years before Ghost Hunters ever aired their first episode.
Nice.
Once Ghost Hunters hit the television and then all these other shows starting popping up, at one point in time, there were over 3,000 groups in just New York State.
Wow.
So what was happening was is people were going, oh, I've seen it on TV. I can do this. So people were getting these groups that really had no idea what to do or how to do it. And they were creating more problems than they were solving.
Well, it doesn't help when you can get some of these tools and devices that you use right off Amazon.
Yeah, that's where we get them.
Yeah, but you know what you're doing. And you know how to handle these things. You don't just go buying random stuff off Amazon.
Right. And then, so what we do is if we find, you know, we have made some great contacts in some of the other Monroe counties and other states. We'll go online, we'll look at the website and be like, we are not referring anybody to these jokers.
Right.
You know, or we will, you know, we'll research the groups before we send a client, you know, to someone in their area. Now, in New York State, we have some very good friends that, you know, if it's a Syracuse thing or east of Syracuse, we have a really great friend that does some work with us. That we do some investigations at Fort Ontario with. And, you know, she's got a fantastic group. She's been doing it a long time. So I have no problem, you know, saying, listen, I think she's going to be better for you because she's only an hour from you. I'm 2.5 hours from you, you know, that kind of thing. We have a group in Buffalo that we trust pretty well. We have a group down in the Southern Tier that we trust pretty well. So we have a network, but it's not like you would think. It's not like we all get together and chat. It's more along the lines of, you know, we've kind of worked with them in one way or another, or at least spoken to them and feel comfortable saying, hey, we would love to help you, but these guys are closer.
I love that. I mean, your group has been around for several decades. You have made quite an impact in the local area. When I moved here, one of the first things I heard about was Union Tavern and the Union Tavern hauntings and your group doing investigations there. And when I started looking into having you guys on the show, you just seemed to pop up everywhere. You were doing a talk down at the Spirit Room. You know, you're doing a talk over here and investigations at these different houses. And on your website, you do have several events coming up where you allow the public to come in with you and go on some of these investigations. And from what I understand, they sell out pretty quickly. They seem to be pretty well attended. Now, do you find that having just regular people come in with you on these, does that tend to lessen what happens? Like, does more stuff happen? Does less stuff happen? Like, does it affect your, you know, ghost hunting in any way?
Is it harder to investigate if you have a group of people with you?
I'll go first, Melissa, and then you can, because I know what you're thinking.
Yes.
I know I can see it roaming around in your head. So I think what happens when we do have groups come in is I think the investigations are in places that, one, we know pretty much what we're going to find. Okay. And it's pretty repeatable, so that with each investigation, we can repeat the findings. So we know that it's happening. And I think it was Melissa that said that we do these investigations and every time we go, we add another sentence to the story. So when we're investigating a place like the Union Tavern, yes, we've investigated it quite a few times. So we've got two or three paragraphs of information written down. But every time we go, we get to write another sentence, you know, in the story. And that was your quote, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So see, I knew that was what, you know, was rolling around up there.
Yep.
And, you know, it's, I think it gives people an insight into what we do. It gives people an opportunity to try it once and say, oh, I like this, but I don't think I would want to join a group. Or, that was interesting, but I got that out of my system. Or, you know, whatever the case may be. I think it's very educational, because we don't do the investigating. We hand over all of our tools to the people that come in. And we coach them on how to use them. We coach them on how to ask questions. We coach them on where to investigate, you know, what to do, what to say, and let them go.
Now, have you ever had anybody like totally freak out, like they heard or saw something and had just a meltdown?
I think we've been pretty good. I'm trying to think back. We've had, because it's public and people go to dinners and stuff, especially at Union Tavern. So we've had people that have gotten into their own minds beforehand and maybe had a couple drinks, and it doesn't always go well. So we've now put in there, hey, try not to get drunk before you start.
That's pretty smart.
I think the only time we had something like that happen was at Fort Ontario out in the cemetery.
Oh, what happened?
And it was just, all right.
It's just a spooky area too.
You got to remember that you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're in a cemetery that has graves from all the way back to like the late 1600s, or I should say gravestones, because there's a whole longer story to that. The cemetery was located in a different place and they moved the cemetery.
That never goes well.
Yeah, that's such a New York thing.
They're very good people. I know for a fact that they got all of the human parts out. But what happens is like sometimes they do find a headstone that rises up after freeze and thaw, or a little piece of one.
Right.
It just happens. Right. But so this cemetery has got unknown soldiers from the Revolutionary War, unknown soldiers from 1812, unknown soldiers from wherever. And we were out in the cemetery, and I'm an idiot. I like going out there around midnight when it's like, and I'm like, all right, who wants to go to the cemetery at midnight?
You're our people.
You sound like us.
So, you know, and Caroline, the person that runs the events at the fort, she's super awesome. Such a great lady. She might be someone you guys would want to talk to in the future too.
Absolutely.
We can hook you up with her. You know, she's like, yeah, go out to the cemetery at midnight. So we had a couple people out there, and it's a cemetery. There's no natural lighting around. You're 100 yards from the shores of Lake Ontario. So there's wind and waves and noise.
Please tell me you saw orbs. Please tell me you saw orbs. Please,
please. Orbs aren't ghosts.
Damn it. Don't say that.
She has an orb obsession.
I love them. Orbs. I don't want to hear it. La, 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 la,
just dust. But what we heard was, what we actually heard was whistling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a coded whistle. Like,
what do you mean coded?
Just like, it was like a, I
like
can't
a military whistle kind of thing?
But it was like, it was like two short whistles followed by a long whistle. Mm. And then about a
kind of like Morse code?
Well,
ish.
Or like someone's trying to signal someone else.
Like a call and response. Right. Yeah.
And then about 50 feet or so down the hedgerow, we heard a response whistle. And there was nobody there. I know because I was out there and ran into the hedgerow. There's nothing.
I love
there.
That.
That screams Bigfoot to me. Totally screams Bigfoot.
As I ran into the hedgerow, I turned around and two of the people that were out in the cemetery with us were on their way back to the to the fort. They didn't want to play with the cemetery anymore.
Wow. So, wow.
Now this kind of leads me to my technique question, because you're talking about being in a cemetery at midnight. Layla and I sometimes do things that aren't recommended to most, because we're those types of girls. Have you ever, as part of your investigation, used a Ouija board?
Never. Nope.
Okay.
We have. I am so anti-Ouija board, it's not even funny.
Ooh, okay, tell me why. Talk to me. I would love to hear this.
Just, we want to hear the perspective.
Melissa, what would you say the percentage of cases are that when we start getting into it and there's things going on and there's all kinds of crazy stuff happening, that at one point or another we hear, well, we did use a Ouija board.
I'd say about 80%.
There you go.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fuck around and find out happens is what you're saying.
Yes.
We've touched on this before.
And we understand it's the whole you make your bed and you lie in it.
Yeah.
You know, you are kind of bringing these things in.
We don't usually recommend people fuck around and find out. Just saying. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob's got a great analogy, though, too. Like when we talk about Ouija boards in our talks, that if you stand in a doorway, and Rob even mentions, he's like, hey, I'm a really tall guy. I'm 5'3", so it doesn't really work for me too much. But you have things coming in around whoever person you're trying to talk to. Right. So you have no control over what's coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm 6'4". I'm like 260 pounds. If I stand in a doorway, I take up a good portion of the doorway.
But stuff can still get through.
Right. What about all those empty other spaces that can sneak through the open doorway? And then, you know, we've gone on case, like we did a case once where the lady was like, yeah, we did a Ouija board. And then we found the Ouija board in her home. And in the middle of the investigation, we went out and dug a hole in her backyard, bound it in red and buried it for her just to close the board.
It was a weird Friday.
It was a weird Friday. As a witch, Friday.
I'm saying very good job. As a witch, I approve. Good job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, so no, we do, we try to avoid those kind of things. Like we will use, I do use dowsing rods on investigations. Mm-hmm. I do use pendulums on investigations, but I feel that's more personal and controllable.
Just real quickly, I want to say that any tools, in my belief, any tools that you use to try and contact or interact with spirit are going to open some type of doorway. And depending on what type of tool you use, you're going to make a small doorway. Some of them make a very large doorway. Ouija boards to me seem to be, it started out as talking boards, the Fox sisters, you know, different people like that. And then it became a game, but it's still a way to open a doorway. And I think people don't understand that they're actually using a tool to connect to spirit. Yes, it's a game by Parker Brothers, but it's still a tool. And I think people forget that. And Ouija boards are, I agree, I find them very difficult to control that doorway. Whereas with dowsing rods and things like that, it feels much more controllable.
Ouija boards are much like more it's open. Right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not out here.
I agree. As an energy worker, I can feel the difference between those tools. And I think people need to remember to study what they're using and pay attention to that. Because like you said, 80%, Melissa, of investigations that you've done have said they've used one. So that tells me that there's something there.
And to kind of expand on that, Melissa, could you tell us, other than what Rob just touched on briefly, could you tell us what other tools you guys use?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually do kind of, we have group people in the group that do more spiritual side like Rob. I do kind of a spiritual technology, and then we have straight tech. So we'll use one of our investigators, our tech manager has like the ghost box, if you've seen that. That goes through the audio.
What's a ghost box?
Adam explains it a lot better than I do because he built it. but it runs through radio stations at a very fast frequency.
Oh, I've seen those. That's the one that kind of, the idea behind it is that spirit can manipulate energy a little bit better than they can, you know, to make sound. So the box itself, they're kind of manipulating that energy to land on words that they want to say to you.
And so to talk through.
Yeah, so it's kind of a step up from the old listening to static and trying to listen for them to manipulate the static. Is that what it is? Like kind of a step up from that type of box?
Yeah, a little bit. So they'll communicate, and if it's got longer words that go over multiple frequencies, then we kind of consider that to be evidence. And if it's intelligent, we'll use K2 meters. Actually, I've got one right here. Just happen to have one. Not far away.
You know how stupid it is that we have? Wait a second. Time out. You know how stupid it is that both of us are sitting at our desks and we both have ghost hunting tools at our desks?
Like within reach.
Thousand rods.
I have a flashlight. I've got my thousand rods.
They are each just grabbing right next to them different items and showing them to the camera. I love this. I love
Now, do you guys use, I've seen on some of these shows, because I was one of those people, I watched every ghost show there was from inception to current present day. Do you guys use any of that infrared where you can like see the outline of a body?
You know, SLS. Yeah, we just got our first SLS. Because we weren't sold on the technology for a while. And over time, like I wasn't sold on the technology for a while. And then we finally started seeing like some actual results with it that made me believe that the technology could work. So we just got.
So you do get results from it then?
Yes.
Nice.
Do you have any favorite results? Anything that you know, you can talk about that, you know, something, anything that happened that really said to you this place is really haunted. Something's really going on here.
I think the SLS at Union Tavern was the one that sealed the deal.
Again, Union Tavern is a very old building in Rochester, in the Irondequoit area. I believe that it goes back to the early 1800s, and it's believed to at one time been a hideout, possibly of a pirate. Is that true?
Yeah. The original owner of the Union Tavern was a gentleman by the name of Woodman, and he was a Great Lakes pirate. And that is, the people laugh, you know, Great Lakes pirate. Well, there's actually a museum for Great Lakes piracy in Michigan.
I love the Great Lakes pirates. I am absolutely fascinated by all of it. So how cool that there's a tavern right here.
And so this guy, you know, built a house in the location, and he built the house in 1819. The foundation is original from that house. The wooden structure above is not. That part is from 1856 through 1860.
Still very old.
And it's been a lot of different things in its inception. You know, we love it there. We love the owners. Kelly and Don are super great people. Mm-hmm. They're both really into what we do, and they like the fact that we come there and we expose their building to outsiders. So
does this rank among Rochester's most haunted places, would you say?
Hard to say. Mm-hmm. I don't like the word haunted. I believe the word haunted carries a very negative, unfair connotation.
What's your preference?
Active.
Okay. Ooh, okay. I like that.
Active.
One of the things that Shell and I have talked quite a bit about, now we've been doing this podcast for a little over a year and a half now and discussed a lot of places around the United States that are very active and have a lot of paranormal activity. And we have come across repeatedly Stone and Water. Every time there seems to be a place that's very, very active, we find stone, particularly limestone or quartz, and running water. And at a talk that I was very lucky to have gone to by you guys at the Spirit Room, which is super cool, through the Brainery, it was the Brainery that puts those on. Great group, do a lot of cool classes, and you guys do quite a few with them. But at the speech that you did, Rob, you mentioned something that had me sitting right up in my chair. You talked about stone and water, and that the correlation of that here in Rochester possibly being part of why there's so much activity here.
And also, I just want to point out for our listeners that aren't familiar with Rochester and upstate New York, Rochester is located right on the shores of Lake Ontario, which is the first Great Lake. And the way I look at it, in order of them, the first Great Lake in Rochester, not only is it, I call it rocky, I'm sure you guys have a better, more scientific word for it. But from that area to like the Niagara Falls area, there is a shit ton of salt mines. So there's the salt mines, there is the rocks, there is the water. Does this have anything to do with the activity level in Monroe County?
All right. This is my theory. Based on years of doing this and based on a lot of research, Lake Ontario feeds the St. Lawrence River. Very rare, does not happen a lot. The other thing that Lake Ontario has is north flowing river. The Genesee River flows north.
Really? I didn't know that.
The Genesee River flows north. So you take a north flowing river over an area that has hundreds of ley lines back in underneath the earth, with deep granite resources, with deep rock resources. And I believe that that's part of what makes the shores of Lake Ontario, and particularly Rochester, towns like Oswego, who also have a smaller river.
We have talked before about the Fox Sisters and the whole spiritualist movement that came to the United States. A lot of that started right in Monroe County, right in Rochester area. And I think that because of this activity, because of this type of battery, attractant, I'm not sure what it is in this area.
I like the word battery.
Yeah, I like that.
it very much seems to be like that. I'm surprised at the amount of activity here, even going back into history, like I said, back to the Fox Sisters. Although we also are the home of a hoax. I loved listening to your white lady talk because I love white lady ghost stories. I very much.
Almost as much as she loves orbs.
Yeah, I know orbs. I know. Don't tell me about orbs. I don't want to hear it. I absolutely adore them. I know all the science. Shush. But still love them. Don't care. But White Lady Ghost Stories, I love the legends of them, and I love seeing the different iterations of this archetype across the country, across the world. You know, the Wailing Lady, the Gray Ladies, the White Ladies. And so hearing that there was a White Lady ghost right where I happened to be staying, I was ecstatic, so happy to delve into this story. And imagine my disappointment when I could find no shred of truth to it whatsoever. And they all have one. All of these legends have a kernel of truth. There is a woman who died. There's someone who drowned, someone who was killed in a car accident. They all go back to some type of truth. And this one just didn't. No. Not only did it not go back to any type of truth, but it was all fake. And I could find no one who had even had a secondhand encounter with this apparition. Just right. Fifth and sixth hand, basically, it's stories.
Every time you hear somebody that says, oh, the White Lady's real, it's my brother's nephew's cousin once bought a dog from a guy whose next door neighbor's friend's brother's sister once had a boyfriend who had an experience.
Oh, you read my research notes then.
Right. Perfect.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened.
And every time we try and pin someone down to a story about it, Melissa, it always comes back to the same thing. Well, I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. It's just a lovely local legend that I think what you said in your talk, Rob, not to give it all away because people should go see it, but what you mentioned is that it just seems to be a morality tale. People yes. took this ghost story and turned it into a morality tale to stop people from going to make out point, basically.
Mm-hmm. I was so sad. It's funny that you mention it too, because Adam Bello actually just put a plaque right there about the lore.
And it's legends and lore. And it's kind of funny because he actually put on the plaque that, you know, it was a, what did he say? It was a
fable or something. It was something along the lines of it was made up.
Yeah, it was, oh gosh.
I think it went back to the murder, the woman with the murder thing.
No. Well, that part was there, but what he said was it was actually a commissary.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
For the zoo.
Yeah, the hot dog stand. I loved it. The hot dog stand. I was so sad. So sad.
But I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm an old hat at it. I love talking about this kind of stuff because if we can get, you know, one person convinced that, you know, it's a natural phenomenon, you know, then that reduces our number of ridiculous phone calls by 10.
But do you get people who call you and or contact you and you get their information and you start digging into it, you assign a case manager, you potentially go investigate and you find out that these people are just, I don't want to say giving you bullshit, but kind of giving you bullshit and there's no truth to their claim.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are people out there that, oh, I'm going to call the ghost group and make fun. You know, those are easy to weed out.
Yeah.
We get pictures of people, you know, we don't know that there's apps on your phone that you can add an apparition to your photo. Yeah. Oh, look at that. It's Abraham Lincoln.
That's the trouble of our generation. We're not hip to all the apps yet.
Well, I mean, I see all that stuff, but we've had, okay, let's just run this down real quick. We got a call from a guy who was possessed by the ghost of Tupac Shakur.
Was he?
We got a guy that called us that his room at the Motel 6 was haunted and he'd been staying there for 6 months. And my response was, I don't think that it's your room is haunted is the problem. I think that you live at the Motel 6 is the problem.
Yeah.
We got the one phone call on our voicemail. This was it's still my favorite one. Thank you, universe. So this woman calls us and says, I don't know how long a voicemail thing on the phone is, like 2 minutes, right, Melissa?
Yeah.
So 2 minutes. Okay. So she starts off the phone call with, you guys need to go out to Montana. Okay. We're in New York, but we need to go to Montana and we have to do it on a stormy night when there's thunder and lightning and lots of rain. And we have to go to this specific town because this specific town, there's a church. And in that church, the people that go to that church hunt human beings. but only on stormy nights when there's thunder and lightning.
That's hard to plan.
You had me until the hunt human beings part.
Oh, it gets better.
It gets better.
There's more. And
she's telling us about, you know, the church has this hidden room where they have the heads on the walls of all the human beings that they've hunted. And there's hellhounds that guard the church. And she's going into detail and she's like, well, you have to go there. You have to, you know, go on this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's going through the whole thing and she's rolling through this message and she's just telling us all this stuff. And right at the end, she goes, and by the way, the hellhound, it's a dachshund. And then the message cuts off. She was just about to tell us that the hellhound was a dachshund.
Well, now I believe her, honestly, because dachshunds truly are from hell. So that whole thing is probably true. Probably
all
true.
I gotta say is it's people like that that make me miss living in New York.
This, we have no idea where this woman was from.
Yeah.
No, we did. She never gave us her name, a phone number, an email, nothing. But she was frantic through this whole message. Like, she really believed this.
I hope she got help. Actually,
yeah.
Well, but at least she gave you the gift of the recording. There at least now, is that.
Now, speaking of help, so you get to somebody, you do an investigation, you find something legitimate. Then what? Are you just like, yeah, you know, you got a lot of activity here. Sucks to be you. Gotta go. Like, what's the next step once you find something? How do you help people maybe deal with this or get rid of it or what have you? What's the next step? Once you actually have found something, is there a next step?
Oh, there's always a next step. We do not, a client of ours is a client for life. We've gone back to some locations 3, 4, 5 times to continuously help people.
Nice.
We do have plans. We have, generally what will happen is we'll get together at the end of the investigation. Melissa and the other case managers and our tech manager will kind of sit down. We'll go through whatever evidence we got. And we'll go through it and boil it down. And then we will come up with a plan to help them. And, you know, there's a couple of plans that we use on a regular basis. Just it's been Stacy and I have been working together for 23 years. And it's something that we developed about 18 years ago, one of the plans, and it seems to work.
Nice. So you have a method, like a proven method that you go through. Very nice.
And we don't ever just leave anybody out in the wind, you know, and not only do we not leave people out in the wind, if we don't hear back from a client in a month or two, we'll call them and say, how's everything going?
Nice.
And, you know, did what we tell you to do, did it work? And like without fail, when they do answer like, oh yeah, we're fine now. Everything's cool. Whatever you did, you know, whatever you told us, we did it and it worked.
Now, I'm intrigued. What about the times where it doesn't work? Have you ever had to like bring in like the next level? Like, have you ever been like, dude, you need to call a priest, you need to call your rabbi, you need to get someone big time in here. Has it ever come to that?
No.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm happy and sad. I'm not going to lie. I'm happy for the people and I'm sad because I was hoping for this like big exorcist real life story.
I do have those. Stacy and I were consulted on an exorcism case.
Really?
Yep.
They still do those?
Here's the deal. People think that you just call the Catholic Church, I have a problem, send an exorcist.
Oh, no. No, that's a process.
Yeah, there's 10 years.
Doesn't that go through the Vatican or something?
And you need 10 years of documented activity.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not gonna call a priest because they're just going to say nothing I can do.
I'm going to call Layla long before that 10 years is up.
Call yourself a high priestess. That's what you need.
That's who we generally call.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we have in the times that we've had to bring someone else in, we have a couple of people that are very friendly to us in the Wiccan community, and we have turned to them for help because they tend to be able to make clients feel very at home without the pomp and circumstance of the, you know, of the churches. It's more earthy. It's more, you know, it's more
relatable
for people. It's not so much, you know, praying and blah, it's more, you know, communicative. And I find that that makes people feel a little bit more at home. It makes them like, and when we do that, we say, listen, you know, here's what we're going to do. We've tried our method, but I have a friend that might have a different method. And, you know, we try to tell people, you know, don't try and sage your own home. You know, I know how to do a saging. I will not do it because I would rather have it done by someone that has the knowledge, the foresight to say, okay, let's restart, let's change, let's do this, let's call an audible in the middle, whereas I might just plow right through it because I didn't notice something small or catch something small. So when it comes to stuff like that, I'd much rather have someone who's skilled in it. And yes, we have called other people in for help. I have no problem with that.
I love that you guys have a team. And I also want to point out that from what I've heard in my investigations, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rob and Melissa, but it doesn't really matter what religion it is that you are using to help fight this or to help correct, you know, this energy, this activity in your home. It matters that you believe in it. It matters that it's something that is close to you. That's much more powerful than saying this is a priest of whatever religion. If the religion that you follow is meaningful for you, that's going to be much more strong in your situation than, you know, say a Catholic priest that you might see on TV or something like that. Have you found that to be true, or do you find that there's a specific way or religion that seems to work better?
I feel like I'm dominating this, Melissa. Oh, no, you're good. Jump in when you.
No, I agree with that too. And it's tough when it gets into religion. I'm not a very religious person personally. But we've had a case, I think Rob, you were on that one with me with all that salt and the holy water, mm-hmm. but she was more of a Wiccan background and she just thought, okay, I can throw holy water at it and I'll make it better. But because she didn't
and it probably didn't
purchase into it. Yeah, yeah. It didn't. And the salt didn't help either. I mean, the salt worked because she believed in that, but just in a negative effect of keeping it in rather than letting it out. So
now I do have a quick question. Now, you said that people should not investigate their own homes, and I completely agree. You know, mm-hmm. you don't want to rile things up, particularly where you're sleeping. But is there anything that you would recommend to someone other than reaching out to a local group? Is there something small that they could do that would be safe for them to maybe protect themselves or maybe to calm things down in their home?
I'll leave that one for Rob.
Or should they just reach out and put their head under the pillow? Michelle likes the blanket. She keeps her feet under the blanket. She finds that very effective.
But, you know, Layla and I kind of do see it from a different perspective because having spent a lot of time being Wiccan high priestesses, we kind of were like, yeah, well, we'll smudge our house, but we have the background to do that and that background knowledge mm-hmm. to do that. So we kind of have a different perspective. I left upstate New York and came to Salem, Massachusetts, and Layla came over the fall last year and we took a Ouija board up on Gallows Hill where these folks were hung for witchcraft. But
I see the disappointment on Rob's face right now.
we have that background knowledge to kind of keep that under control and keep that handled and
to have speak that. To that quickly, I think that's why we got almost nothing, Rob. I think we kind of bound everything and like closed it off so much. We were like, we're going to protect this and we're going to like seal it and we're going to do this. And we got
did
like
too much
nothing.
Of a seal. Yeah. but we kind of, you know, we kind of take it from the perspective that we have that background knowledge to do it. You don't want these folks to kind of just open these doors that they can't close. So what can someone do personally? If I call you and I'm desperate, what could you tell me that I could do until maybe you or someone you know could help me?
Communicate.
Yeah.
Communicate.
With whatever is in my space?
Yep. Don't yell. Don't scream. Don't fight. Don't get out of my house. None of that stuff. Because if there really is something there and you're screaming at it, it's going to scream back.
So kind of talk to it like that nosy neighbor that knocked on your door that you really don't want to deal with.
Right. Just say, what?
Kind of busy right now. Got to go. Can't talk, but we can chat later. See ya.
It's very close to that would be my advice would be along the lines mm-hmm. of, okay, you're frightening me a little. I recognize that you're here. I recognize that you're trying to get in touch with me, but you're frightening me. Can you just stop frightening me? Communicate. Don't go at it. If you, all right, schoolyard fight. If, you know, we've all seen them. it always starts with, no, you're ugly. No, you're ugly. And then
you go at them fingers point and you're getting that right back at you.
Right.
What you give is what you get.
Right. And I'm a firm believer in the threefold law, firm believer that if you give it back, you're going to get it. If you give it out, you're going to get it back three times. So if you come at something already with a little bit of attitude, it's going to come back with a bigger attitude. So I like to tell people, I get it. I understand that you're frightened. I know that you're nervous. I know that you're scared, but I will ask questions. All right. How long has this been going on? A year? Okay. It's had plenty of opportunity to hurt you if it was going to. Has it hurt you? No. Okay. Then we can start from there. Then just start with, listen, I'm nervous. You're making me frightened. Can you please stop? Just communicate. That doesn't always work, but at least it's a starting point. And I'm hesitant to go deeper into it because I don't want people just.
No, they should reach out.
I think acknowledgement is half the battle.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that these things have some sort of higher consciousness. And, you know, is a normal person, if you acknowledge me, that's half the battle. Acknowledgement.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And I think that's what people don't realize, because I'll say that to people at work too. They're like, what do you do? And I say, hey, we acknowledge. Can you watch the cat? Thanks for watching the house when you come home. And they're like, but it's this thing. And it's like, no, but it was at one point a person. And if you ask a person, hey, you're scaring me, they're usually going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. Because yes. Their goal is to get in touch with you. So it's definitely what we try to do is say, okay, yeah, try this, but definitely reach out to us, have us, you know, come into the space, look at it. Because every time I've heard it so many times, Brian, Stacey, you've heard it so many times, every phone call starts with, this is going to sound crazy. And we're like, you call the paranormal group. We've heard it.
You're used to it.
Yep.
Now, what you said, both of you said, resonated very strongly with me, because Shell and I have helped in situations where someone's moved into a space that had some activity. And one of the first things we tell them is to set the space. Make sure your emotions are in check. Make sure there's not a lot of arguments going on in the home. Make sure you set more of a tranquil space and try to, you know, first of all, relax and kind of chill out in that space and set the energy to be a little bit better. And that goes a long way from what I've found in my limited experience. That can go a very long way into helping the situation be less chaotic until someone who knows what they're doing can get there and help settle it.
I'm a firm believer in crystals, as you can see, because they're all around me on all sides of me. And I am a firm believer in getting into a space where it's non-confrontational, that it's not overpowering. Like, don't buy 5,000 crystals and jam them all into one room.
Because that can be threatening. You know,
you can do that to be comfortable and be happy. But what I'm saying is, if you're trying to counteract something that might be going on,
right?
Don't throw the kitchen sink at it. Let's go in steps. Let's go in baby steps. Let's buy a couple of crystals. And if that seems to help, okay. Then we can expand on that. Let's, you know, go with, just basic communication of, I'm not, please, I'm a little frightened. If that seems to help a little, great. Baby steps from there. My biggest thing is that when you get people to like, oh my God, so I went and got holy water and I sprinkled my whole house with holy water. Well, I always tell the joke, tell me why the holy water didn't work, Mrs. Rabinowitz. You know, it's
all I can think of is, you know, like I said, you kind of treat these entities like neighbors. All I can think of is imagine walking into someone's house and then they just start throwing water at you.
Right.
And like, what the hell?
Like, okay. I know that, you know, some of these shows and, you know, they thrive on drama, and drama is what sells the TV show. But like, one of the clips that we play at one of our presentations is a certain muscle-bound meathead wearing his little sister's t-shirt screaming at an entity going, were you murdered? Because that's what you say to people when you meet them. I mean, you know, that's just, you walk up to somebody in a grocery store and you're like, hey, cool t-shirt. Were you murdered? You know, no. Because that's just off-putting. Conversational.
A little off-putting.
Yeah.
And I think that you guys' approach is fantastic because, I mean, it kind of goes along with, you know, some of Layla and Mai's beliefs. Just talk to it. Just talk.
Right.
You know, hey, you're freaking me out. You're scaring me. You're in my bedroom. Could you not be in my bedroom? You want to be in the kitchen, not my room. You know,
I think you've had that conversation with a ghost before, Shell.
I had to have that conversation. You know, and I've had to have that conversation with my grandfather. And that's why I think you guys' approach is great, because I've done that before. I'm like, look, you know, grandpa, this is my room. And I feel like there's like a line being crossed here. And after that, never a problem. He stands in my bedroom doorway, but, you know, different situation.
We still would want people to reach out to us and not try and handle it on their own, because there are times that will lull people into a sense of, you know, false confidence.
Right.
So yes, it's a great beginning point, but it's always better if you can to have someone that knows what they're doing come out and take a look.
You know, I equate paranormal investigators to, say, a plumber. You are not going to have all your pipes plugged up and rip that shit apart in your basement on your own. No, that's not your forte. You are going to call a plumber if your pipes are clogged. Mm-hmm. If you've got shit in your house, you are going to call a paranormal investigator, because why would you do that yourself? You don't fix your plumbing yourself, you call a plumber. You don't fix your paranormal issues yourself, you call a paranormal investigator.
I love that you said that. Melissa, you know exactly what I'm about to say.
Yep.
Every presentation, what we do on the paranormal, I say never investigate your home on your own. Just because you've seen it on TV doesn't mean you know what you're doing. I have seen every episode of MASH. I have seen every episode of ER. I've even watched some Grey's Anatomy.
I don't want you cutting me open.
Would you like me to remove your appendix? Relatively sure.
No.
No? Okay. No one ever says yes.
Perfect. Been about an hour. We can end here.
Rob will always keep talking.
I'm a firm believer in I will tell you what you want to know. And, you know, we can always do a part two to this if you want. You know,
I would absolutely down the road. Love that.
And Layla. Yes. Hang on, before you go, we have an event coming up in August at Unitavern, but I wanted to invite Layla, if you're free, to be our guest at that.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Definitely.
And because I'm going to be in New York from like the 17th to the 24th, there's no way I can go back to New York that weekend.
But thank you. Yes, I would absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll keep in touch. But yeah, if you guys want to do a part two to this, if you want to dive into a little bit more specific stuff, you know, whatever.
And what I would like to do is we didn't think of it and we were ill prepared, but Layla and I have, on both her side and my side, have on occasion when we've been recording picked up voices that were not, like right now I'm recording, I'm home alone, there's no one here to talk, but we've picked up voices on my end. On her end, we were talking, she was home alone, we were talking about buildings and words were mentioned that were related to our conversation. So we would like to get those clips prepared and maybe have you guys listen to them and chat about that sometime.
Yeah. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. We were talking about the Whaley House. I'm sure you're familiar with the Whaley House in San Diego, mm-hmm. which I did when I was living in California. I was able to go there
and I'm jealous.
It was wonderful. And when I got home, we were discussing it on the show and we were talking about the people that had been hung there in that place before the house was built. And I was saying they either used a scaffolding, they built a scaffolding, or they used a tree. There's a man's voice on Shell's side of the audio, it came from her house. A man's voice clearly says scaffolding. So I have that clip for you. And I unfortunately don't have it today, but the next time I have you guys on, we'll have some EVP clips for you. We'll talk about some of your exciting adventures and things that you have seen and heard. But why don't you let us know? I know you have a couple events coming up in the very near future. Why don't you let our listeners know?
July 19 at the Spirit Room, which is an awesome location. We have our full presentation on the basics, how to's of paranormal investigation. We do a class on, you know, the do's and don'ts, everything that we, you know, we try and get people involved in it, try and get people excited about it. Try and get people to not be so crazy about it. And, you know, to want to try it at, you know, at, you know, some of the public locations that are out there that do offer it.
And then August 5th, we have a public investigation of Union Tavern. That one usually runs about 25 to 28. But all of the tickets, so the Brainery presentations can be purchased at rochesterbrainery.com. And then it's uniontavernseabreeze.com.
And I will have links to that in the show notes for anybody who wants to get tickets. Definitely get them fast because people love these events. Anything I have read online, people I have spoken to, you guys just definitely put on a great show, and the ghost hunts are a lot of fun to go to. So check those out if you're able to. They have more information on their website as well, monroeghost.com. So check it out there. And thank you, Rob and Melissa, so much from Monroe County Paranormal Investigators. We really appreciate you guys spending some time with us.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate you guys having us on. I had a good time. I didn't realize we'd been on for an hour.
Right. That was quick.
It was a lot of fun.
We're definitely going to have to do this again because I have more questions.
barely scratched the surface. We have so much more to talk about.
I think we just need to actually do a whole episode on, I need to hear this Jack the Ripper stuff. For folks who want to hear more about Rob's theories on Jack the Ripper, check out the monroeghost.com, and we're going to try to beg him to come back to the show and totally discuss that topic.
Oh, there's no begging. I'll do it.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much for listening to the Stoned Witches Hour. We appreciate Monroe County Paranormal Investigative Group for coming on. And
don't worry, we're going to have them back again, I swear, because I got more questions.
And I got an invite to their next investigation at Union Tavern, so we will definitely bring you some tidbits from that. Don't forget, we will be back in 2 weeks with the next episode of the Stoned Witches Hour, where we will have more ghosty stories and even better weed to entertain all you folks out there.
And to quote Rob, folks, please don't fuck around and find out. It's not in your best interests. Keep it witchy.
Stay high, stay spooky.